Here we go. It is week one, 2016. We talk fantasy football. I am Mo.
And I'm Brett.
That's right. It's week one, ready for fun.
Ready for fun.
Week one is over. It's show one. It's probably the best way to put it. It's called this show one. We talk fantasy football 2016. I want to start this off by Brett a little bit. How has fantasy football changed, do you think, in the, 15 odd years or so that we've been doing it?
I'd say it's, fantasy football is always cyclical. You can always see, you'll always see some elements that come back, some elements that go away, and then they come back again. But, right now, when we started, there's absolutely no question that running backs were the thing to go with. And more to the point, though, running back by committees just didn't really happen very often. And now, it's such a passing league, and running back by committees are so important because running backs are so, easy to find that...
Well, they're specialized within the NFL now.
But they're all absolutely specialized. But, it's much easier for a team to find a starting running back in round three, round five, it doesn't matter, than it is to, often find a starting wide receiver who's going to play more. But, it's so different because we're not picking running backs in, the first three rounds like we did at one point. Now we're picking wide receivers.
And that's obviously the pattern that we saw in the draft this year, in our drafts. I want to talk a little bit about the science of fantasy football, less so than the players, because that's how you and I are finding ourselves more and more as we go on here, approaching it less from targeting players and more from targeting balance and needs through almost a science of fantasy football in that, we're not going to take any running backs, and then we're going to load up on the running backs here in these rounds, and we're going to play PPR leagues so that we know specific players that are going to fall, and we can get balanced this way. And we know we don't care about which player it is as long as it's a player that has these characteristics. And we're really looking more at the characteristics for players than individual players. There's very few players that we looked at and thought they're sleepers. There are lots of players, though, that we looked at and thought their characteristics are appealing.
Well, and I think the thing that it comes down to is that, especially when you talk about sleepers, you say that we're not looking for sleepers, and that's probably true. What we're looking for is value in the rounds that we find it, and it doesn't necessarily matter which player that is. It just matters, like you said, about the characteristics in that regard.
Yeah, the characteristics of a PPR type of team that we're building, because we're very specific in that every single league we're playing is PPR, because that way we're specializing. We're not sitting there and trying to decide we want to challenge ourselves with a bunch of different things. The only thing that we challenged ourselves with was an auction draft, and that is a challenge because it was so long. And it's the weird thing. I mean, Blake Bortles went for $5 fairly early in the draft, and Jameis Winston goes for $10 much later in the draft, which is the equivalent of a 5th-round draft pick for Winston and a 9th-round draft pick for Bortles, which you wouldn't see in a regular league, right? It's only in an auction league that you see this. This is the challenge of it. It's so unpredictable.
Well, needs fluctuate so drastically in an auction league. I mean, it's like you had commented that when you're talking about if there's 3 stud players, you should probably bid on the second one because people will have seen the cost of the first one. And so then they'll think, oh, I'm not going to pay that much. So then the second one winds up being a little lower. And then by the time they realize that they're running out of studs, you're back to the third one. And that one goes really high again.
Yeah, because there's desperation for him. So the one that to bid on, if you want to spend the least amount of money, is almost always the middle player of 3 or about equivalent. For instance, this year we were talking about Beckham Jr. and Jones. And this is escaping me, sorry.
Antonio Brown.
Thank you, Antonio yes. Brown. So we're looking at the 3 of them, and it doesn't matter which if you're in an auction league, it doesn't matter where they're nominated. The one that's in the middle is the one that's probably going to be the cheapest because people are going to overspend on that first one because it's the first one. They don't really know their budget yet. And the third one, it's like, oh, God, I got to get him. So now you're desperate and you'll do whatever you can to get them. So that middle one's the one people will let go a little bit cheaper. And that's the psychology and, again, the science of trying to do this. And that's really, like I say, what we're trying to be about here. it's a good example. Last year that we looked at Devontae Freeman and we thought, okay, he's going to have a role, so he's undervalued, and Coleman is going to have a role, but not as big as a projecting, so he's overvalued. And this year we looked at the exact opposite. No, neither last year Coleman was going second or third round, and he wasn't worth it. And this year, same thing. Freeman wasn't worth it, and we know that Coleman is too low. Both years should have been going in rounds 5 to 7, not in rounds 2 and 9 and 10, which is where they were going. And that's the science of figuring this out.
In fairness, with Coleman, our assumption was that he was going to get hurt and lose the role. He did, you know, but he also didn't play very well, and so I mean. You know, the best part is
it's more that the other guy played off the hook.
Oh, he did play off the hook. Yeah. But a big part of the reason that we picked him was because we guessed that some of these things would happen due to, you know, obvious research. But also then we wound up picking Freeman a lot of times in such a reasonable position that it wouldn't have mattered if we chucked him out after week two if he didn't do very well.
There was three players this year that we were looking at thinking, okay, potential great steals. And that was Coleman, Robert Kelly, and Eli Rogers, which we were consistently taking late, late, late. And two out of the three had great first weeks, which to me is a win. If you had gotten one out of three, you know, that would have been a great first week. And two out of the three had great first weeks. Those are, again, it's like, you're guessing, and I'm not even talking sleepers so much as we're talking patterns and coach patterns and player patterns and league patterns and who you're going against. So, I mean, that's the same thing. Now we're past week one, and all this might have helped you with your draft. But the truth is we had to get past this draft because our strategy is different this year. And it's taking what we learned last year and refining it much more of a scientific nature than what we were doing even last year.
Well, one of the things that we're looking at is the drafting is just a small part. You know, before for us, the drafting was actually a very large part. We would try very hard to make sure that we put a bunch of players onto our team that were going to stay on our team from week one through to week 17. And I think the difference is this year, we're looking at it as like, these players we just drafted. What's going to happen is we're going to switch them in, we're going to switch them out throughout the entire season. I don't care who they are, if they're not performing, if they don't have a good matchup, you know, it doesn't matter to me. We'll slot somebody else in who does. That's the real difference for me between drafting this year and drafting in previous years.
And again, that's getting back down to that science of it. And this is what we're going to try and be talking about probably over the course of the season. Is we went 4-2 in our first week, and the first week is the hardest week because we don't have the data yet as far as the who's improved and who hasn't, both as individual players and as defenses they're facing. But more important than the individual players is always to meet the defense and their patterns and what you can follow from their patterns, because every NFL team has the talented enough players and good enough coaching, except for the Rams, to maybe the Browns. But
well, I think Hugh Jackson is a talented coach. He just doesn't have a talented player. Team.
But every single coach they're going to be able to they're going to look at the patterns, they're going to take advantage of them. And once you see patterns develop in the NFL, and this is the amazing thing, is it's so hard for them to shore up that pattern. If you have a bad pass defense in the first 4 weeks, the odds of you having a great pass defense in the last few weeks is really long. It's bad. Once it's bad, that's really tough to turn around.
Well, because where are you going to find these players? That's the number one thing. I mean, yes, occasionally a player will come back from injury that will bolster your defense or whatever. But, you know, ultimately, most of the good players, especially after week one, the vested veterans get to come back and their salaries aren't guaranteed. So they're going to come in now. So starting week two, we'll see them get added in. Maybe that's a slight boost, but I don't really believe that, because if they were that good to make a huge boost, they would have already been on the roster.
Exactly.
And I think ultimately those players who are going to make that big a difference aren't available. So yeah. After 4 weeks, when you see that one team has a terrible pass defense, yeah, there's nothing to help them.
No. Again, you probably want about 4 weeks worth of data, 3-4 weeks worth of data before you start feeling comfortable. But you start to build that data data in week one. And so that's again what we're doing. So it's like, okay, if certain things we had suspected. We suspected the Falcons and the Colts had a bad pass defense, and the Falcons and Colts had a bad pass defense.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm comfortable with that going to week two. And we expected a bad offense in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Cleveland. And it was super bad in two of them. And it still wasn't that good in the other one. It's just the team they were facing was worse.
So it's going to be interesting to see San Francisco when, you know, going forward. I don't believe that they're going to be a very good offense for the whole season.
But we don't have the data to say that for sure after week one. Whereas we do have the data on Los Angeles and Cleveland to say that they're going to struggle. Certainly. But again, even within those teams, you can see certain guys who are going to have value still. Like Crowell had a nice game, kind of garbage time carries, and it got a touchdown. You look at that, you put that aside, you filter in that data. One of the things I saw was a blog, and this guy talked about how the week one waivers is the most important waivers of your season. And I think that's a load of crap. Brett, why is that a load of crap?
Well, I think, especially in this case, here's the thing. Now, we have absolutely seen it where in week one, you find a player that went generally undrafted, and you can grab him and slot him in, and he'll be valuable all season. That does happen. But that could happen in week two or week four or week six. I mean, I'll tell you, last year, there was a guy who dropped Drew Brees when he was struggling in the early part of the season, and I think it was around week four or five that he went on waivers, and of course somebody picked him up, as they should, and he went on to have an unbelievable season. So that guy, that player who picked up Drew Brees, would most definitely say that week one is not the most valuable. It was week five or six when he picked up Drew Brees.
And again, it's come back to what we were talking about. We're slotting players in and out. So we're not looking at, other than maybe, I mean, when we have Antonio Brown, we're going to keep Antonio Brown. He's a stud. He's playing, right? But where we're talking about players, we shouldn't have the holes that we need to really shore up, but we also shouldn't have but there also shouldn't be anybody out there that's significantly better. It's just that their matchup is better. So, and again, you're learning about that. If you've done the right job in your draft, the players available, there might be one or two slight upgrades, but it's not a huge upgrade, and especially not after week one to really know yet. I mean, people can go, oh, well, this usage and this amount of targets, and like, that's great. That's great. But if you've done your job right, you have a team that has interchangeable slots anyways for the entire season, because that's going to allow you to always play the best matchup. And make no doubt about it, there's times when a guy who is not valuable and only have two or three good games is going to have a better game than one of your starters, and you have to be prepared to make that move based on the patterns of the defenses.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things, because in previous years, in week one, for us to set our lineups, it has been as simple as going in and choosing the number one guys that we picked in all those positions. So, like, basically from round, one to eight, those guys were all getting slotted in, and then our defense and our kicker.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was different, because just because we drafted a guy in round four and we drafted another guy in round eight, well, we looked and we said, like, hey, the guy in round eight actually has a better matchup. He's the guy to go with in this case because of that matchup and what we anticipate his role and the defense being.
Now, again, we went 4-2 this weekend. We also had individual teams, but we're going to ignore those because those are kind of a little bit more fun, and we're not really concentrating on those as much. So we're going 4-2 as within these patterns.
And you lost, which is why.
But I outscored you.
But I won. So.
We'll see. We're in the same division. We'll see. Now you got to make a competition. And we will be talking about our picks. We like to show our weekly picks, and we'll be talking about who's doing a better job procrastinating. Procrastinating? Well, we do that too. If it's a better job procrastinating, I will win.
Prognosticating?
That too.
Perhaps that's where you're going.
That you might win at. But procrastinating is definitely me.
Oh, yeah. You got that nailed.
Well, Keith could beat both of us.
That's true.
But again, we're talking about, like, we're looking at it from a very much, like, even the great players, I wasn't like, oh, I want that guy. I was like, oh, okay, all these guys are the same. So who's following to us? We're comfortable with this. We're going to build the team around this. And again, I'm also looking at the idea of these waivers. You're not going to chase anybody, but one of our favorite strategies, and especially when you do this, and this is a huge advantage you're going to have, if there's somebody who's obvious on the waiver wire, somebody who's going to take over a starting running back position or something of that nature, obviously you're going to target him on the waivers if it's a blind bidding, or if it's just, you know, whatever it is, you're going to target him. But one of our favorite strategies because of this is to wait to see what mistakes people make. Like the Drew Brees one is a great example. There's always people that are dropping players that, frankly, they shouldn't be dropping, or that they don't realize the value. So be very careful of dropping a guy who had a bad week because he had a bad matchup, but is going to have a great matchup this week and thinking he's struggling. Maybe he's had three bad games in a row because he had three tough matchups, but his next two matchups are going to be great, and then you drop them thinking he's struggling, and instead he's now emerging for the next 2 weeks, and then he'll probably, and maybe then he has a tough matchup and he goes back down. So you got to follow that pattern too. Be aware of that and watch people make that mistake and take advantage of that on the waiver wire. That's a favorite strategy. Wait for other people's errors.
Well, and again, because we're always looking at the next 2 weeks, the next 3 weeks, the next 4 weeks kind of thing, just to see if there are going to be a valuable role player for us in that next month. Because that's the thing, right? You could drop somebody who's had three bad weeks, and if you look at their next three games, it could be like Denver, Carolina, and, you know, somebody else awesome. And it would be like, well, no, I'm not really that interested in picking somebody up or picking them up. I'm more than happy to let somebody overspend on that guy. But in, you know, most cases, you can find a real gem in those regards.
Yeah, how frustrating is it? I mean, I think we've all had that thing where we picked up a guy who had, like you, a guy has a great game. Nobody picks him up because they're thinking it's a one-week fluke. Then he has a second great game. And maybe people are still thinking it's a fluke. Then he has a third great game, and all of a sudden he's the hot waiver wire, and pick him up, and then you play him, and he puts up a dud or two. And you've all had that. It's, again, because you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. You got to be looking at the situations more than the players. The situations are king in the NFL and in fantasy football because of it.
Well, again, I'll go back to Devontae Freeman. I mean, here's the thing, right? Last year, we had drafted him, so we were the guys who had him. Obviously, in the leagues that he wasn't getting drafted, he would have been a very hot waiver pickup. Now, I also know that those people who really went all in on him as a waiver pickup had to play him the entire year, and because they felt like they spent that money, they went out there, and he was doing really well at the beginning. Near the end of the year, he started to taper off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for us, that was a clear sign of like, okay, well, I'm not going to get rid of him because he's played so well. But in the case of a worse matchup, we were more than happy to slot in somebody else, even though he was the clear-cut number one fantasy running back, you know, that was available. But and all the experts' predictions, it was like, oh, Devontae Freeman number one, Devontae Freeman number one. But we're still backing away from that because we're not looking at the past. You know, for Devontae Freeman, we're looking at the past on the defenses and the present on Devontae Freeman.
Exactly. And this way you don't get caught up in, we don't get emotional. We don't look at players and go, we've got to draft this guy because he's on our favorite team. I love when we play guys like that.
Oh,
like
that, absolutely.
That's the greatest thing. There's two things that I know are going to happen every year. One's going to make me happy, and that's somebody's going to draft somebody too high because they're on their favorite team. And somebody else is going to give us a dumb trade offer, and I'm going to hate them forever. Like already happened in week one. That's the thing. I came to you Tuesday morning. That's the first thing. Week one's done. I'm like, now let's wait for the stupid trade offers to start rolling in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that first one. So, I mean, here's the thing, right? I mean, it's one league. We drafted Marvin Jones in round 8.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's about right.
About right. Reasonable value. Marvin Jones looks like he'll have a good role on the Detroit Lions offense,
yes.
And of course that team is going to have to throw the ball a lot, I would say. He offered Ted Ginn. Now, I thought to myself, when I first saw this trade, I thought to myself, A, it's a bad trade, I wouldn't do it. Because, you know, Marvin Jones is 1A, 1B receiver on the Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. Ted Ginn is number two, number three, number four receiver, you know, yeah. target receiver yeah. On that team. And so then after that, especially because it was before the start of the season, I thought, okay, well, where did these guys get drafted? Obviously, Marvin Jones in 8. Ted Ginn was a throwaway pick in the last big round of the draft, round 15. Why? Even if, like, I haven't seen these guys play this year, why would I make that trade ever?
Yeah, if that was the case, I would have drafted Ginn in 8.
I would have drafted, or, well, more to the point, I probably would have drafted Ginn in 13, say, just yeah. be, you know, just to get him a little bit higher than he was worth.
But even then.
We're not talking about
seven. It's really insulting. I really hate it. It's one of the things that really hurts fantasy football for me. And you're not trying to rip, or you're trying to rip somebody off, or you're trying to get value. Or you're just being stupid again. And it's played out this week because we see 12.8 points, I believe, for Marvin Jones in a PPR, and I think it was 2.1 or something like that for Ted Ginn. And it's like, and that's kind of, you know, I mean, it won't always be like that, but
no,
over
Ginn's
the season.
Gonna have his big games, but yeah. he's, and you
Jones
know
Jones will outproduce him for the year, though.
Yeah. And I guess what drives me nuts is, like, every time when I'm reading about fantasy football, constantly what I'm reading is I'm reading, okay, well, you know, Theo Riddick had a really awesome week one, and last year he didn't get many touchdowns, so if you're a forward thinker, maybe you should be looking at selling high.
No.
But the problem is that when, if I were a believer in that, which I'm not, I would go in and it would be like, oh, I will trade you Theo Riddick for you know, who's a reasonable guy, like Eric Decker.
Yeah.
You know, based on current points, you would look and say, like, it's like, okay, well, that's reasonable. But based on draft position, based on long-term outlook, you know, if somebody offered me Theo Riddick for Eric Decker, I'd be like, no.
No, no. But if somebody offered me Eric Decker for Theo Riddick, you please go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And again, it's not that we're going to sit Riddick for the rest of the season. It's that Riddick had the ideal matchup this week, and there'll be weeks when he won't. And over the season, he has value. But he doesn't have every week value. And understanding that is, I think you said a good thing when we said we were willing to sit Freeman. We want you to understand, last year we had an over 700 win percentage. We made the playoffs in 5 out of 6 leagues. We made the championship game in 4 out of 6 leagues and won 2 championships and won one other, like a third place trophy or the other league. Maybe it was a toilet bowl trophy. We ended up winning on the one league. We didn't make the playoffs or something like that. We had, anyways, a fantastic year. And we had injuries. We lost, in one league, we lost Keenan Allen and Le'Veon Bell. That was like our first and third round draft picks, and we still made the playoffs because we weren't tied into the idea that any player is the player that's going to. And we had D'Angelo Williams and dropped him, which is a dumb move we wouldn't have made this year. But we dropped him when Bell came back. But it's the idea that we're not tied into that one player anyways. And as soon as somebody goes down, it's like they're perfectly replaceable. I don't care, except for with very few, like 5 or 6 people. In the leagues, they are replaceable on your fantasy team because your matchup will always be just even. And a perfect example is we invested highly in Russell Wilson in one league, and Drew Brees. Brees paid off. Wilson didn't. Meanwhile, we picked up Alex Smith in another league, and he outperformed him because his matchup dictated he was going to have a better week. So by streaming the quarterbacks, we believe we could always score in the top 8 in fantasy points, maybe top 5, just on streaming the best matchups.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, we, you know, and we went over this last year and how we did with our streaming, but I think the number one thing is that we're simply put not afraid to stream any position. You know, I mean, if
We sat
losing.
Antonio Brown last year a couple times when yeah. we had him. And you know what? One time it didn't work out, and one time it did. And nobody else would have had that other time where it did.
No, because you need to be willing to roll the dice and attempt to do these moves when you think that there's a player who has a better matchup. Because often it's giving you, you know, you're raising the floor and you're raising the ceiling on on the points that you can get. Maybe they're not going to score as much, but you know what? I would say that it's probably 70% of the time that they're going to score at least the same, if not a little bit more. Sometimes maybe even lots more points.
Exactly. So, I mean, one of the things I'm looking at is, oh, people are going, okay, like Dorsett is a hot waiver wire pickup this week. Okay, well, Dorsett last week played the Lions, who do not have a good defense. This week, guess what? He's going up against the Broncos. He's not having the same week. If you go at him as a hard waiver wire pickup, you just made a mistake based on the experts giving you that. Experts are full of crap. They're always trying to look like they know more than they do, whereas we don't really know anything. But the stats know everything. So we're just following the stats and the patterns.
Here's the thing, though. For me, when I look at Dorsett, I'm not looking at this week, though. You know, this week he's got a terrible matchup to me. So I say, like,
but people who pick him up as a hot waiver wire will slot him in this week, not realizing.
Well, of course
some of them will.
And here's the deal. They'll also spend more money because of that. When I look at Dorsett, I look at this week, I look at the next week, and I look at the week after. And if I'm looking at that grouping of weeks, and if he has two good matchups, then he's worth something. But the chances are good. You know, my dollar value is probably not the same as somebody else's dollar value.
And the other thing is, though, I mean, somebody might spend on him. He puts up a dud this week, and then they drop him. And then you pick him up again next time when he's worth less because the matchup, again, people are so, they always are like, oh, this person cost me the game or this person. Nothing ever costs you the game. Nothing. You're never going to be right all the time. You're never going to be wrong all the time either.
And it's especially in fantasy football, because the truth is that you could score, like you said in the ESPN league, you outscored me. But the difference was I won my matchup because I scored more than the other guy. You faced a guy who absolutely went off, scored an enormous volume of points, and even though you scored a goodly sum of points, you lost. And that's what happens, is that you can't tell that you're going to face a guy who absolutely goes off and picks all the right matchups that week. Sometimes it happens.
You're really, you do want to look at those matchups. Sometimes you will look at it and go, okay, this guy has a lot of high scoring potential, so we're going to have to take a chance here. And sometimes we look at it and go, okay, I don't like this play. Let's not take a chance. Let's slot in safer players that don't have as high a ceiling but don't have as low a floor. And we do look at that. Don't get me wrong. But really, most of the time I'm playing against myself because I can't control the other guy. I just want to put up as good a lineup as I can. And if something goes wrong, I don't worry about it. I learn from it. Move on to the next week. Take that data. Move on to the next week.
Yeah, I mean, we should have played Spencer Ware in every league that we had him. We didn't. You know, we learn from that for next week.
And exactly.
And the truth is that I'm not, here's another big difference. I'm not afraid of Jamal Charles coming back. And even whenever Jamal Charles comes back, I'm actually still looking at Spencer Ware and saying he could be the number one guy there.
I think he's going to have RB2, RB3 value anyways, which where we drafted him is great, even if he doesn't have 30 points again. And again, I'm not at all thinking to myself, one player wins you or loses you. It's not like, oh, this one player. Like there's a league we lost because Des Bryant put up 1.5 points. Okay, I'm not looking at it. If our other players had done well or if we had read the matchup correctly or anything like that, we would have won that. But we didn't. Okay, fine. Des Bryant didn't cost us that win. We have a whole team there that's supposed to score.
And
Russell Wilson put up no points for us, and we won that game by like 40 points because everybody else that we played was right.
But, you know, the funny thing is, though, too, is that sometimes you can just look at your whole team. And at the end, I know that there's been games that we've lost. And if you combined everybody, the starters and the bench players together, we still wouldn't have won the game. And, you know, again, sometimes you just don't find any players.
Yeah. Sometimes like that, that's a league where we have Beckham Jr., for instance. So, okay, we could have played our bench, but we know that Bryant is going to have better weeks. Beckham Jr. is going to have better weeks. And we know that Spencer Ware is not always going to be that hot. And this is it. Antonio Brown might always be that hot.
He might. He's a special player.
AJ Green might be that hot most of the season too, so we'll see. But yeah, I mean, again, it's just learning. So taking everything we've seen this week, We're going to wrap this up. Brett, I want you to tell me what you're looking at and thinking for next week, kind of strategy-wise, not so much game-wise. We'll get more into game-by-game and player-by-player and patterns as we learn the patterns and start telling you what patterns you can see that are the data shows. But, Brett, why don't you kind of just give your thoughts here for this coming week, and that's how we'll wrap up this, because We Talk Fantasy Football is a good, short little podcast, tight full of information that helps you win your league.
Well, I think the number one thing that that I'm pleased about seeing is that we started to gather information about the defenses, and the defenses are the most key thing in those early weeks, and I think we started to see the teams that are going to falter. We started to see some of the teams that we need to see more of, and then we started to see like the obvious cream of the crop who are going to be good. But I think that for me, the really important thing is just to be able to kind of gather like 5 to 10 defenses that you think can be exploited by offenses, which helps you to kind of start predicting those offensive players, and then you can see some of those good defenses, and you're also like, okay, you know, because let's be honest, the San Francisco 49ers defense, you never would have predicted that going into it. But at the same time, especially,
I thought it was a good matchup, but not that good.
Yeah, I mean, depending on their week two matchup, you could look at them and be like,
the Panthers.
Yeah, in this case, it's not good, but you know, you can start. If there is somebody else like that, then you start looking at them and saying, maybe they're worth a flyer.
Exactly. So I do think that, that's a good point, Brett. And as we go into that, you can also do this opposite. You can start looking at what offenses you can exploit for streaming defenses, which is always recommended unless you're able to get value on a Denver Broncos or someone like that, like we were able to a couple times. Otherwise, just stream, and you won't always hit, but you'll hit more as the season goes on. So that's it. We're going to go OUT. Make sure you get out there, listen to our advice, hit them with the hind, get yourself a win. Brett, I think you have something last thing that you wanted to tell people.
Oh, I think it's we'll see you and we'll beat you.